How are you?
I'm good. You?
Yeah. I'm not, because I'm hustling around back and forth so much.
Yeah.
And because our water thing isn't always full, I'm drinking not enough water.
Yeah, I was doing the same.
I'm noticed.
Back at it though.
I've gotten some dehydration headaches the last couple of days.
Oh, yeah?
Because I've noticed I'm just like, I'm moving around so much.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I keep forgetting to drink.
Got to sip water.
Crazy how if you have a bottle around, you just sip it, right? You do the same?
Yeah, like, 1,000%. I drink way too much.
Yeah, right? It's it's just there. You can just sip it, you know? It's one of my biggest like key tips for the kids. We're talking about just have a bottle with
you.
Just
have a bottle with you all the time.
You'll just sip it because it's there. Just out of boredom, if nothing else, you know? So that's a good thing. Trying to get on my water consumption. So I want to talk about tryouts today, unless you have anything you want to say first.
If I was just explaining my dilemma.
Yeah.
If I during this podcast,
that
because I'm getting
noise.
These stingers down my arm.
A little pinched nerve.
Yeah, nerve damage from my neck and shoulders.
Yeah, maybe we could crowdsource it. If anyone has any advice for Uncle Andy,
yeah, go
write
for
us
it.
A line. Write us a line. He's
brutal.
He's got some shooting pains.
Someone's going to say stretch.
Yeah, or someone's going to say you might be having a heart attack.
No, it's not what it is.
Left arm shooting pain.
Because these two fingers have been numb for a couple of years.
Yeah. I was saying before with your feet, I remember you think you'd take your skates off and start freaking out.
I used to skate so much.
I know. On the ice like crazy. But
crazy for sure.
I know. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the PowerTech Online Membership Program. If you've been listening to Andy and I wondering, hey, how are they able to get all this podcast content out there? Well, that's because of our members. For just $9.99 a month, you can get access to our online video library, including hundreds of videos of Coach Andy teaching, and have the option for consultation calls with Andy or myself to go over anything you need. We can cover training, nutrition, coaching, parenting, agents, the junior college hockey path, whatever's of interest to you. You'll also be able to participate in our popular Ask Me Anything episodes, have access to special discount codes, and be given priority for any PowerTech in-person camps or events. If you like what we're doing here and you want to support us, this is the best way to do it. Visit powertechhockey.ca/memberships or find the link in the description of this video to learn more.
Tryouts are coming up.
Yeah, tryouts are coming up.
For the most part.
Yeah, so I wanted to... First things first before we get into this. Is it not the stupidest thing? Maybe there's a rationale, but is it not stupid that we have tryouts right after the season's over?
I think so.
Like, should it not be right before the season starts, like in September? Give the kids the summer to grow and yada yada? Is there a rationale? Like, I'm not even being
I believe there's two things. One, someone told me, because I said the exact same thing. Because when I first started coming down here, and when I first moved down here and I heard tryouts were in April or whatever, I'm like, why? Didn't make any sense to me. So yes, I think it's that. But people said one of the things I heard it was for fundraising. Okay, but now I think
You have the summer to fundraise.
Yeah, I guess. And then the next reason was I don't know, but I heard that it's because you have AAA, AAA, and everything has to get done in a certain amount of time. They choose the spring, but I don't actually know the answer. But if I was to be God of hockey, I would change it to August tryouts, mid-August, late August. Who knows what the other reasons are? Maybe it's because they go into overlap other sports, but it seems like whatever sport you're in, that takes a priority anyway, so I don't know.
Do you recall, because I don't really remember, like I felt like the fundraising we did was during the season.
I don't know.
Like, do you remember, like, whatever?
I don't know because I never did the fundraising. I wasn't about to do the fundraising.
But don't you remember, like, you do, like, a team car wash
or
you do the stand outside of Tim Hortons and ask people for a dollar and this kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Don't you? That was during the year.
I guess. So, I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah. And then with the, even with the AAA, like, because I get that to a degree, too. It's like even with the NHL, like, you don't leave to go play in the coast or Europe until like October or something, right?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So to answer your question, it really doesn't make any sense. And we've talked about it before. Like what happens is, you know, and one of the questions that I had was the good, the bad, and the ugly of tryouts. And to me, that's one of the bads. Because if I'm on the AAA team, I'm on the AAA team and I'm maybe third line or second pair of D or third pair of D, and I'm questionable of making the team, and you're playing at an AAA level, and you know, you have a growth spurt or you take the summer to really work hard, who says that you can't beat me out of my spot? But if it's right at the end of the year, like it is now, you finish in March, April, and you don't have any time to develop, to grow, anything like that, like yourself and I, you know, and tryouts are next week. If I'm the coach, there's a possibility that I don't get to recognize you because you haven't had a chance to grow, get better, get stronger.
And wouldn't that be the first thing? Like, wouldn't that be the top consider? Like all those other things, I'm not saying it's not valid, but but even if like, okay, you had to do double A tryouts or whatever after, have the tryout in July then. Or why are we having it in spring?
I don't know.
Spring?
Maybe that's ice availability. I don't know.
Because like there's four, that's like a huge growth stretch for kids. Like
someone could grow 6 inches.
Oh yeah, like 4 months, dude.
Someone could put on actual muscle. Someone could get a shot or work on skating or actually improve their game. Yeah. 100%. I don't understand the concept of it. I don't. I never will.
Yeah, strange. Okay, so I guess that was my first thing that I wanted to just throw out there. But from the first, I guess that first, go back to that first question, the good, the bad, the ugly of tryouts. So from a, you can say from the coaching perspective or the parent perspective, like what are your general thoughts about just the tryout evaluation process in minor hockey? So just a couple of things that come to mind that you can maybe chew on.
Yeah, well, first thing is I think there's so much hockey that goes on and people know who's who in the zoo most of the time that the tryouts are, for the most part, not really tryouts. I've seen tryouts where it's like they're doing all kinds of drills and stations and, I mean, I don't know how that evaluates a hockey player. Goalies is another one. Is if you get a team with 10, 12 goalies coming out, which I don't think is unreasonable, and they're doing drills, well, drills doesn't evaluate a goalie very well, in my opinion. And if they happen to play in scrimmage sessions that they might only get a couple shots, or they get peppered and look real bad or whatever. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a fair evaluation of a goalie. But in general, like, I think a lot of the times people already know who they're picking. And I'll be honest for a change. I'll be honest is, you know, when you're coaching or you have a certain age level, that's, you know, let's say you're in Toronto or Detroit. Teams are somewhat already picked, or if they're not already picked, there's a couple guys. They're recruiting. They start recruiting in November or October. So, like, you already got your guys. It's not really very often that someone's replacing one of the better players.
It's almost like a junior camp.
It's almost like a junior camp. And then you get areas like this. Everybody knows who the players are, right? So that's not to say someone can't beat someone out, but I think that's the bad part, especially as we said earlier, if you just finish your season, you know who the players are. And nothing is going to change too much in the next 2 weeks or a month. So that's the problem. So the evaluations, tryouts or whatever, I think sometimes it's necessary, but it is what it is. But if I was a coach, it would be straight scrimmages, nothing else.
So let's get into a little controversy here. When you say, okay, so if I'm a kid that has played AAA for 3 years, in my opinion, it only makes sense that as the coach, I'm going to be defaulting to, I expect that kid to be on the team the following year. So it's almost like that kid has to play himself out of a spot and somebody else has to play themselves into a spot. And that's the way I feel like it should be. Like that kind of makes sense. Like what's the alternative? Like you can't go in with a blank slate as the coach, which is kind of what I think the expectation is made out to be by some parents, the way they talk about it, where it's like, well, they're just picking guys that have been on the team year over year. And it's like, well, what are they supposed to do? It's like, that makes sense. Like, these are the AAA players. You would expect that these guys would be the guys that are most able to play. Again, that doesn't mean there's not going to be a surprise or whatever. But it's almost like now the onus is on the player that's lower. Like, you have to overwhelmingly show that you belong on that team. You know?
Yeah, I think that's mostly true. Your coach has seen you for 30, 40, 50 games and practices and knows everything about his current team. So he's got a pretty good idea. And he may have been out scouting or watching other players to see if there's anything else out there. Now, where I think a coach, and I think this is important, I think, you know, I learned this it's a business principle, is that every year you should have a little bit of turnover to have some fresh guys and some new guys. So that's why I think it's important when you're playing on a team that you don't forget that you're still always trying out. you know, your attitude, your hard work, you know, do you get the systems? Do you play the systems? Are you a team guy? All the things that makes a player. So at the end of the year or during the year, that coach could be looking at a player and going, okay, if I can replace this guy, I will. Right. So I don't think like in an area like Windsor, Sun County, smaller areas like that, you're looking for 10 guys. I think you're looking at replacing like maybe third line, last two forwards, maybe a goalie. That's still a lot. And can you replace that many guys? Not typically, because at the end of the day, they'll look at guys and go, okay, well, at least I know what this guy is. But that's where it's important that as a player and a parent, you teach your kids to do all the good habits, play the right way and all that stuff, and understand that there's going to be some hungry kids and that develop a little bit later that might have a crack. Yeah. So if I'm sitting there, my thing would be if I'm coaching, if I have a player that I would like to replace, not like to replace, I don't want to say it that way, but if I have a player that is replaceable, that would probably typically mean he's just not a very good player at this level. So I'm going to look at someone that's close to that level, because maybe that person, if I give you the chance, you might come out hungry, you might come out and eager, and that eagerness might transfer into a pretty good player and whatnot. But the big separator for me would be if I had to make that decision to bring you on the team over this other person, it would have to be number one, it would have to be, okay, is he a better player? Or could he be a better player? And number two, replacing someone would be mostly not, I don't want to use the word attitude, but the things that encompass a team player. Yeah. So if you're not a great kid in the room and if you're kind of average, you kind of show up, you know, lackadaisical and stuff, then I would consider replacing you.
Yeah, I guess my point kind of getting into this territory is, on the one hand, like, it is a fine line, but on the one hand, you get the parents and people that talk about it like, oh, it's the old boys club. Like, if you're on the team, you'll be on the team. And sometimes that can be true. But you talk, like, people always talk about having a good core group on your team. So as a coach, it's like, you don't want to change the team over year, because as a coach, it's nice to not have to start from scratch, where you have a core of guys that they understand your philosophy, they understand your systems, they understand this stuff. So we're not starting from zero every year. So I think a little bit of tolerance for that perspective is probably warranted for people that don't necessarily understand what it's like being a coach and having to deal with all this stuff. Is at the higher levels, talk about NHL teams, talk about junior teams. They always say, oh, that team has such a good core. They have a good core group of guys. Every team wants that. So as the coach, that would be the bias if I'm being, you know, defensive of the coaches here. On the flip side, exactly to your point, it's like you are looking as the coach, they're still looking to see who's the replaceable guys or on the fringes. But I think it's unreasonable to think of it like every year is a blank slate and everyone's on the same playing field. It's just not the reality.
Yeah. But then I always say also, like, I agree with all that stuff, but also, like, to keep in mind, like, for parents that are, or for coaches and organizations that are doing this, is your obligation, whether you're best friends with everybody or not, your obligation is to put together the best team possible. And if you go away from that, then you're not serving that organization, your organization, your team the right way. So there is that stuff that goes along too. But that should be your number one organization. So if you and I are best friends and we have a kid and your kid is just not there, I mean, there's times where people will say, well, I'm going to take my best friend's kid. But the reality is, if we're doing this the right way, then we have to take the best player available. And sometimes that hurts people's feelings.
Yeah. And I think that's when I'm talking about this, the underlying assumption that I'm making is that we're trying to do this the right way, because that gets into a whole other can of worms of, you know.
Well, friendships get broken up over it.
And these are the comments, right? Yeah. It's like, well, what if the coach is picking a kid who's his best friend's son and this kind of stuff? It's like, yeah. It's like, yeah.
And stuff happens, obviously. Right?
You know,
obviously.
But the way that I'm framing it, like when I'm talking about, I'm assuming underlying, like, you're trying to do it the best way possible. So kind of speaking of that, I guess, what for you as the coach, when you're evaluating, obviously it's going to be age dependent, but when you're evaluating a team, how did you go into the tryout process? Like, you go to watch, I know you, like, you didn't necessarily have tryouts all the time, but if you're going into a tryout situation, let's say you have your core group of guys, do you boil it down as a coach to, okay, I'm looking for these three. Let's say, for example, you have a 12-year-old team. So it's not a junior team. We're not spending a ton of time scouting and all this. So I have tryouts. I got 3 days or 5 days to evaluate new kids. do you boil it down to, okay, I'm looking for these three qualities in my forwards, or these three qualities in my defensemen, these three qualities in a goalie, and if they hit these three, then I'm taking them to the next day? Or like, how do you almost, or do you not, but I'm assuming there's some kind of system of thought that you would bring to the tryout to try to narrow the group if you have a bigger group, or no?
Probably be different ways, because if you have, I mean, your top guys are typically your top guys, typically, right? So that doesn't change a whole lot, right? You know what I mean? So you're not really looking for, like, I mean, if you can get an unreal goal scorer, of course you're going to take that person. So that would kind of trump everything, right? If you have a team that is high goal, like a ton of goal scoring, maybe you want to add to that. So like it depends. What my thing would be is, again, that I would want to give everybody a chance to show their stuff. So that's why I would play games. And I would want to see someone that would make my team just be an extremely hard worker. Now, what does that mean? That means that, because if someone's going to work hard, that there's a possibility that they can be a very good player, right? Possible. It might mean he just works hard. But what I want to see is, because in tryouts, like a lot of times people just try to score goals and make it all about them, which is kind of what you want to do. But an intelligent person, someone intelligently looking at a player, they're going to look at different habits. So if I get a defenseman that is, you know, like is going to fit in that bottom two, maybe to fit in the bottom two that I would be accepting to maybe change, then I don't necessarily need that kid to skate up the ice through five people and score. What I want to see him do is have as best that they can at that age, skate well, and have good gaps, have good sticks. But I guess it's not even that. It's more like the compete. When he goes into the corners and stuff, he comes out with the puck. He makes a play. He gets up the ice. He comes back hard. He maybe has a decent shot. Like, we're talking 12 at this point, right? So we're looking at things that, oh, maybe there's things that I can work with. And if I'm looking at a forward, a little bit easier to, that, maybe it's a little bit easier to evaluate, because you can back check. You can see a kid back checking real hard, shift after shift after shift. Like, that's a quality that any team can use. And if I have a kid that's doing something like that, that's going to get my attention. That's going to get my attention. If you like really, and then he gets in the battles, like he's not afraid to get in the corners and work and you know, make a pass instead of trying to go through people, like the very simple things. So like a lot of times a kid that'll make your team is not because he's the greatest player. I mean, those kids are probably already on the team. You're looking at things that you can say, okay, that's going to help my team, right? Especially if he's putting the effort in harder than the guys that are in that bottom core of your team, then you can say that's a replaceable person, or I can replace him with this person because the effort's there on the things that actually matter.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean?
Yeah,
for sure.
So that's the way I would look at it. So to say, like, there's three things that I want from a kid, one would be like the effort level, like the battles, winning, and those things would be one. The compete. And then obviously, if he has that, but he's like, I don't want to say that word, but if he's not a good team guy, then that would be something that detract from me. But if he's a good kid too, and he shows a desire, and he's willing to work, and he's got a base skill level, or maybe even not, I know I can maybe get something out of that thing. That's something that I would do that would really pique my interest.
Yeah. I think for that, like, if I said the same, kind of three things, I guess would be like that compete piece, the attitude, like with your teammates and all that, and then the baseline skill set, like hopefully you are a decent skater and these kinds of things. I was talking to a kid that's interested in coming to the 2010 AAA team with the academy next year, and he's an international kid. And I was saying to the parents when I was meeting with them yesterday, I've never seen the kid play, so I was like, send me some video so I can see if the kid can play. And I've had other people talk and say that the kid's pretty good and whatever, but I've never seen him. So I said, send me some video. And then we kind of kept talking, and then I was thinking about what we always say about video is, I don't want your highlights. You know, I don't want your highlights.
10 shifts.
Yeah. I ended up going back to talk about it because I wanted to make sure that was clear. I was just like, I don't need to see all his goals. I was like, I want to see just like full shifts, just raw footage of full shifts of just him. So if you can cut those and just send me a bunch of those, that's how I'll be able to tell. Because, like, you can pick 10 highlights out of anybody. Like, you can pick, a kid can go for a good rush 4 times a year and you got it on video and now you have a highlight reel, right? And that's not what we want. And I think people would do well to understand that if you have a coach that's knows anything about the game, that's what they're going to watch. They're not just going to watch the, oh, wow, good hands on that play. Like, that's part of it, but it's only one element of it. You know what
so
I mean?
Funny because I've had that where when I was doing a little bit of stuff, because video does help people. And when people ask me about how do they make the game better, I not getting in scoring chances, this, that, the other thing. And that's what I do is I'll say, send me, you know, you get me 5-10 clips of a game. And that's typically what I get is the highlights, or they go, well, he didn't score a lot this year. It's like, no, no, just send me highlights.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah.
I don't want to, if I see you scoring a goal, then that negates the question. Cause you got to see why you're not scoring or why you're not getting a puck or why you're not getting passes. I can work with that, but a highlight video is not anything I can really help you with.
Yeah. So then where in the evaluation process, like, does, how do you account for the age appropriate part of it? So if I'm picking a team of 10-year-olds, realistically, it's like, who cares who's on the team to a degree, right? So it's like, if everyone, like, everyone's going to kind of be in the mix. You might have the one standout kid that's a way better skater right now or can shoot or whatever. But the majority of the kids are all going to be kind of just like, have a lot of weaknesses, not very clear who's who, and or like, how do you pick a 10-year-old team, right?
I've never had to.
What about, like, well, I guess you're, when Charlie was a kid, there was 12 kids that came to tryouts.
Yeah, we had to cut one kid.
Yeah, so that's not hard. Yeah,
and he was on the team the year before.
Yeah, yeah,
and so it's
it's
not
like
fair,
you had 30 kids to pick from. Yeah,
but I mean, I think at that point you're looking at guys that can skate. You know, good skaters, maybe they got some decent hands, they can shoot a puck a little bit. And then when they get into a game, if you're playing five, like, that's how I would do it, is you have scrimmages, and that's how you reveal the players to me. So it's just a matter of, you know, do they skate well? Can they pass? And a lot of 9-year-olds never pass. But can they pass a puck? Do they back check hard? Do they work hard? It's like same things, but you're going to be wrong sometimes for sure.
Yeah. So then as you get up to the higher levels now, how does the evaluation change for the older players? So obviously it's those things, but are you looking now more position specific? Are you looking more situation specific? Or
I wouldn't say position specific, because I don't believe that, as I've said millions of times, yeah, or maybe not a million, yeah, hundreds of times for sure, that, a 10-year-old defenseman might be a centerman later, or should be a centerman now. So I would never look at that. I would look at, can you skate? Can you pass? Can you shoot? Can you compete? Right? And that would be my first things, because you can place players in different situations whenever you want. So that would be my number one thing. But as you're moving up, like, if you've watched, you know, I went to my nephew's game a couple weeks ago, and I think it might be what used to be called Pee Wee. It might be Major Adam. So, like, U10, U11. And it's not like, even if they make a pass, it's not great. It's off. It's poor
by
decision.
Accident.
Yeah, or by accident. Yeah. Or, you know, it's like so individual based. So you picking a team on passing, if you're younger, you just get frustrated. But as you get to the peewee level, or what do they call that now, U12, the passing and the playmaking and the thinking becomes just a little bit more evident. Actually, quite a bit, but it becomes a little bit more evident. You start applying those principles. It's not about skating through everybody all the time. So, like, that vision and smarts actually comes into play a little bit at that age. And then as you get to the U14 or U15 down to, I'm talking the hitting years, now it's the contact. So does the contact make a difference? Yes. So now you're actually looking at making plays and maybe a little bit of systems, or actually a lot, but there's a little bit more systematic. Can they think the game a little bit? And the passes, passing and all the skill level like that should be better. But now you take the physical element in there. Can they handle that, or would they be good at that? And not even like making sure that they finish hits all the time. It's a matter of not backing down. So there's a little bit of bravery that comes in. I find that's the biggest separator in hockey, is once you get into the body checking years, you'll see guys that you didn't notice before become pretty good players. And you'll see guys that were pretty good, maybe you don't even notice them anymore. So, and those are the big years where you start seeing players emerge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
And I was going to say something about the physical part. That's what I was going to say. That's why for me, I don't find playing AAA hockey essential at the younger ages. I don't. Because you just don't know what you're going to be. Yeah. Now, is it good to play good high-level hockey? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because I was just going to say, this is what I hear from a lot of parents now. And maybe I'm out of touch. I don't think I am. But a lot of them are saying now that the gap is just so big, even younger. I don't know.
They don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, right? Like, that's what I find. But
I say that, I just said they don't know what they're talking about. Like, I'm an asshole and everyone else is stupid. That's not what I meant. What I mean by that is it's they're not informed. They're hearing what other people are saying and they're assuming that that's the case. But I can tell you that if a kid plays really good, I'll say this. I moved Charlie 1 year earlier to AAA than I would have liked, only because the attitude of the kids were less serious at that age. And the skill level, like the guys just started moving. So it was like, I think it's just time to go one more year because I didn't want him to get, I want him to be, he was serious about hockey. So I wanted to put him in a serious situation. But I seen so many guys that play AAA for the first time in Bantam or Midget, and they're fine. Or they're real good. I mean, if you're good, you're good. And if you're not, you're not. That's just the bottom line. What you do at 10 is not going to make a difference.
So this kind of brings me to the next favorite question that we get is, should the kid play with a higher level team as a bottom end player or play on the lower team as a top player? So this is like the most popular thing. It's similar to the when to jump AA to AAA question. It's the same thing. This is like the favorite thing people like hearing us talk about because it really is not clear. And I think the reason it's so interesting for people is because there isn't a right answer because you can do either, you know, and it just is very situation dependent. But my two pieces of advice, and then you can say whether you agree or not. I always say you want to play at the highest level you possibly can, provided you're getting the opportunity to play. So if you're going to play as a third line player on a AAA team where everybody plays, that doesn't mean it's all equal, but you actually get to play and you get to experience and you get to do penalty kill and power play and learn the game, or you get to be the top end guy on the AA team. More times than not, I would say the AAA option is better if you can afford it and all that shit, because you are playing at a higher caliber now and you're going to get on the ice. On the flip side, it's if you're on the third line of a AAA team where the coach shortens the bench all the time and you're going to play six shifts, which we see, like I've seen AAA teams do this, then maybe it's better to hold back gear and be the guy that gets all the ice. And like, you don't know how serious the kid is anyways when they're younger. But even at like U16, I remember I got a kid right now that plays with me and I'm like, wow, this kid's actually could be a very effective player in a role. If you play him where he's strong, like for what he is, he would be a very effective player. And he played in his draft year last year, AAA, and was like the extra forward and never got a sniff doing anything. And I'm just like, how did you not? Because I knew the team too. I'm like, it's not like everybody was way better. You know, they had some guys that were better, but on a 10 forward team, like there's no way you shouldn't have been in the mix for doing whatever, you know? So how is that possible? And that was at a U16 level, which is a little bit older. But so that's kind of the question I'll throw back to you is like, how do you feel about that kind of thing? I know we've talked about it before, but just kind of reiterate that kind of philosophy that you have on that question.
I think it's actually fairly easy to figure out who that person is that could and should move up, because they should be really, really good. Like if you're going to move up to at the AAA level to play up a year, you probably should be on the top end of that team anyways. If not, then I think you're probably better off. I wouldn't even say maybe you're not dominating, but continuing to build to have confidence in playing the game. So do you understand what I mean by that? Like if you're a guy that's like if you're the top guy, and typically, well, not typically, that's what it is. If you're going to move up on a AAA level, or any level, really. If you're not one of the top guys, you're not going to get considered for that anyway. So then you got to look at moving up. Is it that big of a jump as far as the hockey goes? If you're one of the best players in AAA at that level, it's not. It's AAA. It's good hockey, but it's not that huge of a jump. So if you're on a great, like a really, really good team, that might be the thing that separates you from doing it or not, but you should be able to fit in and play well. So the question is, it's a personal question because you've seen both sides. You've seen someone that was just like in the middle of the pack. Let's say he was made the higher age team and wasn't the star, but he just got played well and, you know, wasn't great, wasn't bad. He was just like good and average. And then eventually plays with his own age group and he turns out to be, oh, that was worth it. And then you see the complete opposite where they played up and then maybe they peaked, I don't know, whatever the reason is, and they're just the same person they would have been anyways. So if I was to make a call on that, I would just go to the NHL level first. Okay? I know it's not youth hockey, I get it. But why do you think it's better to come to the, like, if you're a guy that could get some games in the NHL or go back to the American League or junior, that's why they do it, right? Because you're not ready. And it's not helping you not playing. So getting ice and pushing yourself like even a little bit at the next level down won't hurt you. So Detroit Red Wings were famous for that when they won all those cups. They had NHL-ready players that they wouldn't bring to the NHL. And they'd let them marinate in the American League for 2 years, 3 years. And then when they came up, you'd have a Pavel Datsyuk or you'd have a name the names, right? And they were ready. And they become seasoned vets. They become pros. They learn the how to be a pro. They learn how to be to play with that kind of structure and all that stuff. So when they come up, they're in the system.
Consistently.
Yeah, consistently. They fit in. Whereas you'll get a guy that comes into the NHL, or not, let's say it's the NHL and he's kind of rushed, there could be problems with that, right? So I just don't think there's ever a problem with spending, like at that level, one more year developing. So if we knock it down a level and say it's college, or I'm not really familiar with college because I know, well, I guess I am. Colleges, you have freshmen, red shirts and all that kind of stuff, extra numbers. And if you're not playing regularly, would it be better for you to play in practice there? It's a debatable. Some guys get better with just being around OHL players or college players. So it's debatable. But would it be better to maybe have one more year of junior if you could and then come in ready to go? So I know like in the OHL, I see this a lot, guys that come in and they're good, but they're not ready. They're not quality OHL players, and they get exposed a little bit here and there. And when it gets deeper in the year, it just becomes harder and then they get really exposed. So would that player be better off playing for the Windsor Spitfires, or is he better off playing maybe 1 year of Junior B? And my answer would be, if you look at, like, actually saying the Windsor Spitfires, they do a good job of not rushing. Like, usually they'll get their first round pick, sometimes second round pick, playing for the actual Windsor Spitfires. But typically, most guys, they put them in the Junior B loop or Junior A loop to have one more year to develop. Team that does it probably better than anyone is the London Knights. It's the guys. Basically, if you're a second-round pick, you're not playing there. You're going to get some games. The odd guy gets in there if they have like that intangible thing that you bring to the table. That's whatever. But they want them to develop at the lower level. And amazingly enough, the next year, Easton Cowan, right? So there you go. And I could use him for an example. He was a really, really good player. I'll use him as an example. It doesn't take offense to this at all. He was a really good player when Charlie played AAA. They played against them, and he was on Elgin. And first game I saw, I said to my wife, I said, there's a good player. Small. He's just a tiny little guy. Brain. Make plays. I said, that's a good little player. She goes, yeah, he's small, though. I go, yeah, but watch. He makes plays. Shift after shift, he would make plays. Got to the year that there was hitting, first year in minor bantam, it was almost like he disappeared. And I that's what I mean. I don't want to offend him by that. But he was small. Maybe he was a little bit... figuring out the hitting part, Maybe he was just didn't develop as much that year, and maybe he was really, really good, and I just didn't know him as much. That's my point to that. And then he was drafted in the second round, and then he went played a couple games with the London Knights, but he played Junior B. So the ego thing can make you say, "Oh, he's not gonna make it. I'm better than him because I'm in the league or whatever." Right? He comes in the next year and gets a first round pick to the NHL and was outstanding. He's one of the best players in the league. So the question is, did London do the right thing or not? Should they have kept him? Because maybe he would have been real good the first year. But their belief is you go down there, you marinate, you learn how to practice with us, you earn in practice. And at the end of the day, if you're good enough the next year, you're going to have 3 years to have a great career here. And it seems to be a system that works. So now, saying all that, if we take it one level down to midget, to Bantam, like to youth hockey, I feel that that applies. Because I don't think it's ever a bad thing to be able to have the puck on your stick and to be able to feel good about playing hockey, making passes, trying things and stuff like that.
Yeah, the only caveat to that would be I love that. That's such a good analogy too, how the NHL does it, the OHL does it, whatever. But the only difference is those guys are taking responsibility for your development. They're investing in your development by doing this, keeping an eye on you, making sure you're getting what you need done. Whereas you take it down to the minor hockey level, you're responsible for making sure that you're getting that development still, you know? So rather than having the professional organization keep track of it for you, which is super nice and convenient, it's on you, which makes sense at the lower level. It's like, you need to make sure that you're still checking those boxes. So if you go down to I remember this conversation with my dad is like, you know, he liked using the word climatize, how like you climatize to what your environment is, right? We talk about that away, whatever. And for the same reason, you moved Charlie up to AAA early because you could feel the attitudes of the level he was at in AA or A or whatever. That's the same. It's the same thing. These are the kinds of questions you can ask yourself to make the call: should I jump or not? Where you have, okay, this team, they have a poor coach. The kids don't really care. They're all soccer players, not hockey players. They're just here having fun, whatever. Okay, maybe that's a factor. Maybe I'd rather go be a bottom end AAA player if I can, versus we might run to make the championship run next year with the AA team and they're all super serious and we have a really good team and I could be the leader of that and whatever. That's a different situation. End of the day, you're the one that just has to remember you're responsible for making sure that development leap still happens. So I think that analogy applies that you're pointing out, but that's the only caveat is you have to be in charge of the development piece. It's not because the coach isn't necessarily trying to develop you to make Windsor next year. That may not be the goal for that coach in youth hockey, you know? So just remember piece of it.
Got two more things on that. One would be when you're moving up, do not underestimate the dressing room. Do not underestimate the year of maturity, like outside of the hockey. So the dressing room, different talking and different things that the kids talk about once they become 12 to 13, 13 to 14, that maturity. So as a parent, you don't want to underestimate what that difference is. There's the innocence changes very quickly. And then also, like, because Charlie had that one opportunity to do that in, let me think here, it was in about Pee Wee Bantam that he could have played up and stuff. And but the kids that he'd be with are not the kids that I'd necessarily want my son to be around, especially at this point of his life, still kind of young. And I think we made a good call there. And then the last point I was going to say about playing up is I did it a couple times, right? So I can use my own personal experience. So
like playing the year up or playing the level
up? Well, okay. So in peewee, major peewee, which is, I don't know what it is anymore. I put up a lot of points. Played a lot of hockey.
You 13.
Yeah. Okay. So I was going to play up like. They wanted me to play up, and I looked at the guys on the team, and I'm like, I like my friends. And it was the best thing I ever did. We had a good team, but it was like the hockey wasn't as good as a year up. But for me, I had the puck all the time. And if I didn't have the puck, I'd work hard to get it because I wanted it again. So I'd always have the puck. And that would mean 4, 5, 6 goals a game. But it would also mean because I had people around me that were always talking about moving the puck, and I always liked setting up plays. So I knew I could probably get a goal, but I would try to get creative and make something else happen. So that was very good for me. So then in minor Bantam, I played up on my minor Bantam team, and I played up with the major Bantam and the minor midgets and the major midgets on different levels. And the maturity factor was a big thing. And then when I, anyways, and I did fine because I was a very good player, right? So my last year that I got drafted as an underage. So back in those days, you can get drafted as, it was 17-year-old draft. So major midget and minor midgets were considered underages, which most of them played on the major midgets. So I played major midget. So a year up, and like, I knew I could, like, it wasn't a problem. That wasn't the issue. And then I was drafted high, but I was the top scorer on our team. Actually, me and Sean Hafey. And we put up 100 and some points each going in AAA tournaments, and we were a shit team. So it was appropriate for me as far as hockey goes. But then I look at it, and I made good friends and stuff like that, but I really did miss my group of friends. And at the end of the day, it wouldn't have mattered. It wouldn't have mattered. I would have went as high or higher the following year. So yeah. It really didn't matter.
That's a good point. I want to just highlight what you said there, because you're talking about being one of these elite level players. And if you are one of these elite level players, this is a common thing, though. It's like, I want to play a year up to make sure I'm continuing to challenge myself, right? That at best, that's the intention. You know, I want to make sure I'm challenging myself.
Yeah. And I knew I was going to probably, if I went up, that was the other piece of that. If I went up, I knew, put it this way, I knew that there was the underage draft. You're only allowed to get guys in the first three rounds. And I knew that I was 99.9% sure that I would be one of them. So I moved up to make sure to enhance the chances that I would get drafted. And whether that was smart or if it was ignorance or whatever, it happened. But you know what drove that? It was ego. It was 100% ego, because I knew that in wherever we played, I was going to be one of the best players for sure. And I wanted to go as high as I could early the year before. I wasn't thinking, is this good for my development? I wasn't thinking, what's it going to be like in 3 years? I wasn't looking at anything like that. I just wanted to get drafted as high as I can, play in the OHL when I was 16. And then I could, and I did. And I, you know, at home, I was like the guy at home that was the underage. And it was an ego thing, and it felt good, but it meant absolutely nothing. Because I look at the development in hindsight, could have been better, could have been worse. I don't know. Maybe I peaked, maybe I didn't. I don't know. Like, I don't know. But 100% ego.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, my point in saying this. For some of these top guys that feel like they got to play up and make sure they keep challenging themselves and whatever, there's something to be said for that. That's fine. But to your point at the end, would it have made a difference had you stayed with your own age group? Now looking back, you know, at the time it can seem like, yes, I need to be up to make sure I'm challenging because I am the elite of the elite, and that's fine, and parents can think that and whatever. But in hindsight, like we talked about this when we were talking about some of these exceptional status guys, like if McDavid waited another year, like would he not be McDavid anymore?
Think he would be.
You know what I mean? Ecky, same thing. Like any of these guys that went underage, like if they would have waited one more year, in hindsight, like it's just the media marketing, ego driven. It's cool. It's just cool to be that guy.
You look at McDavid.
Yeah.
You could say now that he should be an exceptional status for the next league.
Yeah.
But there's no other next league. So yeah. He's always had to. So, and that's a thing that I laugh about a lot of times is you always want to play with the best players. You know, it's like, well, what did Wayne Gretzky do? Yeah. You know, you want to challenge yourself. I mean, he had to find a way to challenge himself. Connor McDavid has to challenge himself, I'm sure, because he makes the NHL look like it's midget hockey, right?
Yeah.
So in practice, like, what does he do? Like, it's a self-driven thing, right?
Yeah, that's great. So I just got one more thing I wanted to touch on. Another common question that people have been asking is about all of the, like, pre-tryout skates and camps and all this stuff. All of it costs money. And people are kind of asking, how important is it? Like, do I need to be participating? There's the pressure of feeling like everyone goes, and those types of things. So how do you feel about that kind of stuff, the extra pre-skates and all this.
Okay, so just, I'm blunt, straightforward. Someone called me last week from out of town, and they said they got invited to a junior camp. We need to know right away because we're only taking the first 34. Okay, so if you were invited to a camp, but we're only taking the first 34 that sign up, you weren't really invited. There was mud thrown on the wall, and if you get there fast enough with your cash, you can come on the ice with us. And the age is, I think, 13 or 14 for a junior. That's the answer. Like, I'll expand. I'll expand. It's never a bad thing. Like, no. Yes, most of those camps, most, because I told you this before, my kid still gets letters from university of this, university of this for the skate, junior hockey here for a skate. It's email lists. They get the emails and they send it out. And they are moneymakers. I know local junior camps and all over the place, they have these skates because they are somewhat fundraisers. And there's also trying to identify some players. But if you're not of the age to be in that league, there is absolutely no point because you get scouted or not. So the pre-camp skates or evaluations are about making money, is what it is. Sorry if I sound like I'm very blunt, but it is what it is. And now, if you are living in an area where you feel like you probably won't get noticed or whatever, then go, because maybe you could open some eyes. And then the other thing where people could say, shut up, Andy, is, but we want to, then go. Like, I have no problem with people saying that. It's just like, just understand where you're at and where you're getting into. Some of the good things about going to camps like that, and this gives people a reason to say, okay, that then I can go, it's good to get in a room full of people that you don't know and older people possibly, where you can have to be challenged just to fit in. You know what I mean? So that's where I would say some benefit of it is. But if you're going there to try to go to a scouting combine or a scouting thing, and it's pre this and pre that, it's just about making money. And a lot of the times the people there are, I wouldn't say they're scouting. I wouldn't even say they're necessarily watching. A lot of the times they're just kind of there holding the thing and peek their eye out once in a while. So, oh, that kid's all right.
Yeah. So like people like the marginal case, cause that's really what it affects. Cause at the end of the day, if you're one of the best players and you never go to a skate, the coach is going to call you and be like, hey, are you going to come play for us this year? If you didn't go to tryouts, the coach is still going to call you if you're one of the best players. So put that person aside. If we get down to, you know, the marginal guy that maybe could make it, maybe not, do you find it important for that guy to be there, you know, showing his face, being consistent? And like, how much do you feel?
Well, let's go back to the original statement. Okay. Just being honest is, if you're coaching a team of 14-year-olds and your team is good, bad, whatever it is, your core group is your core group. It's not going to change a whole lot. You got to know that there's going to be a couple guys. So if you feel that you have the ability to, you know, that team, you really do believe that you can make that team, then yeah, for sure, go 100%. But if I'm not saying don't ever try anything. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, like, putting realistic views on it, right? Yeah. If you want to go there with high expectations that I'm really going to make this team, it's like there's a couple spots. And you could, 100% you could, but.
And I think because now in a recruiting role, what I've been learning now, and which I think people can kind of understand without having to be in the role, but you kind of have your top tier guys that you want, and then you have your next tier guys where it's like, okay, I would take you if the spots aren't filled, you know? So that's what you have to just figure out. It's like, are you one of these guys or one of those guys? And if you're one of the guys that I'll take you if one of the spots aren't filled, then I think it is important that you're showing some level of interest, commitment, and willing to go to the team, because I take that into account. Like, people who are first to show interest, like I was just talking with, I've been talking to several people, but a lot of people, I tell them up front, it's like, yeah, you're one of the initial people that have come to chat. Like, this matters to me. Like, I actually take that into account, right? So those things are important, but you have to figure out, like, are you a marginal guy? Are you on the line? Or are you a guy that is for sure going to be on the team, because then the rules kind of don't apply to you, really. Like, you can kind of do whatever you want.
The organizations, like, if your tryouts, like Hockey Canada and all this stuff in youth hockey, tryouts start there's specific dates they're supposed to start. Anything before that is someone making money. Now, having said that, I'm not naive. I'm not stupid. There's some people that will have these skates, and if you don't go, you piss them off. So, but then again, if you're one of the best players, it doesn't really matter. And if you're fighting for a spot, maybe that does. Like if you're right in the mix, maybe it does. But the reality is, should never be held against you that you play baseball and you don't can't come to these skates, or you play lacrosse. You know, the tryouts should be the tryouts. That's the perfect world. But there are gray areas where there are people out there that will hold that against you. So I can't answer that for everybody. But, you know, you have to know yourself and your life and where you stand and the people you're dealing with, I guess.
Yeah, I just had that.
It's not clear as mud.
Damn. I just had that conversation. Yeah, I don't need it. I just had that conversation with somebody the other day. They were saying, well, you know, this person invited us to come to this thing, but they said, you know, if I don't go, then they're not going to talk to me ever again, kind of thing. And I'm like, what kind of person would say that?
Well, I
like,
guess,
what kind of, right? I guess. But it's like, so you then your decision now is, okay, is that even a person who I would want to be
That's
involved
what I was
with, right?
Yeah.
Which, and maybe it's yes, because maybe you're just that desperate that you want to be on this team for whatever reason you have. But for me, I'm like, if any adult ever said that to me and my kid, I'm not coming. I'd rather go somewhere else. I'd rather go somewhere worse. That's on paper worse than dealing with you, if that's your attitude, you know? But you got to be willing to bite that if that's,
but that's you and that's me.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And that, that's, I did the same thing with our kids. It's like there's bigger priorities than him playing for that team in life.
Yeah, for sure. You know? So, okay. I think that's all I got. Do you got anything else you want to talk about?
No, I'm good. We're going to get the hell out of here and go to Guelph.
Yeah, that's right. Game 4.
Yeah.
Guelph, Ontario. Okay. See you guys next week. Bye.